truck.
Sure, I guess. So, we are here. I'm Todd Dubik, and this is Cabot Martin. And we are here with Hannah Smith, talking about her story of immigrating to the United States. So let's just start at the beginning. Hannah, where are you from?
I'm from London, England.
All right.
Awesome.
That's where I grew up and lived. With the exception of a few years, that's where I lived all of my life before coming here to the States.
Mm-hmm. So it was, we said 6.5 years ago?
Yes, yes.
So that's going to be like the beginning of 2012?
Correct. June 2012.
And what can you tell us about the, in our sociology terms, like the pull factors? Like what were the things that made you decide to come to the States?
So I
also,
maybe
like, we'll ask questions, but if you would rather just like give us a big introduction, or if you would rather go off on tangents like at any time, just say whatever. Like say
I'm
whatever
sure
you think.
I'm sure that you have well-designed, open-ended questions.
Yes, we've got a couple.
That's
the idea.
That's fine with me. So I may be slightly different from some of your other examples of immigrants in that I'm a dual citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So I am a US citizen anyway. My mom is American and has been in England for close to 50 years and is still there.
Okay.
So my dad is English, my mom is American.
Mm-hmm.
So I have lots of family here,
right,
including family in Harrisonburg, not just in the country generally.
Okay.
And so the pull for coming to Harrisonburg for me at that time was overall an interest in being somewhere new.
Okay.
A bit more of an outdoorsy lifestyle. I'm a city girl and I love that. And I love nature and wanted to be somewhere where that would be closely accessible.
Yes.
And I also have a cousin and his family who live here in Harrisonburg. He's actually a professor at JMU, which is how I first found out about JMU. And professionally, I was interested in some of the things that were going on at JMU in 2012. The new president had just started. Some of his approaches are resonant for me because I work with children and young people, and yet I also have this academic work that I do, but I'm very interested in how policy of how we work with young people is informed by research.
Mm-hmm.
So I work in this academic field in order to work better with children and training people who work with children. So the engaged idea at JMU and some of the ways in which that approach is being applied was appealing to me.
When you say the approach of young people, do you mean like children or like the students that you're working with?
So prior to coming to Harrisonburg, I hadn't taught in university.
Mm-hmm.
I had completed a PhD, but I had been working in my professional life with children and teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
So when I'm talking about applying research and understanding of how to have best practices for the interests of working with children and young people, that's I'm talking about largely underserved populations of children and teens.
Okay. That's interesting. So it was like JMU. Like JMU was doing such interesting work with what you were doing. That's cool.
Yeah, and it wasn't like I researched the whole country and thought JMU, that's the place for me.
Right.
It was a confluence of having family here, being interested in an outdoorsy life, thinking that coming to Harrisonburg was actually a step. I didn't imagine particularly that I would stay in Harrisonburg.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't think of Harrisonburg as being my final destination.
You thought it was a stepping stone.
Thank you. Mine's banging. let's leave the banging for now, because they're recording. Yeah.
That's adding character to the interview.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes it real.
Yeah. So it was a confluence of opportunities, timing for myself. I was a couple of years after finishing my PhD and had been working as a social market researcher in London and wanted to do some work that was a bit more applied.
Okay.
And so when I came here, I started working with local teenagers in the schools.
Right. What does that mean that you're working as a social market researcher? What kind of stuff was that?
So that is, so an example of what a social market researcher would do. So market research would be, okay, I want to sell this thing. How do I sell it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Social market research is about, okay, we want to implement behavior change. We want to understand how to influence. Okay, I'll give you some examples. So, gun crime, knife crime amongst youth.
Yes. Yeah.
You interview a bunch of youth to work out what's happening in those environments, and how do you produce government-sponsored messaging or programming that will be effective with those young people.
Okay.
Or
that's actually very cool.
When,
yeah, that's very interesting.
When the Olympics was going to happen in London,
mm-hmm.
and the transport system, we're like, what are we going to do? We're going to have a million more people travelling on these trains
mm-hmm.
every day.
Mm-hmm.
So there was a very long and detailed set of studies into how do we effectively message people to change their behaviour. So Londoners
mm-hmm.
needed to take different routes
yeah.
so that all the visitors could take the routes on the trains and the buses and that be effective means of, of transport.
Right.
Which would require me as a regular Londoner to take a different route. So we sampled a whole load of messaging around what's going to make me actually change my behaviour or what's just going to piss me off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so social market research is around behaviour change and understanding how do people perceive the messaging that they get.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's
and what's effective and what's not effective.
Very interesting.
So there's a
mostly
of
working
examples.
Like for the government or also for private companies?
So for a private company who had won repeatedly won bids to work for the government for these particular
mm-hmm.
projects. So
mm-hmm.
we're an outside agency who have put a bid in for this is what we can do for you, this is how we're going to do it, this
mm-hmm.
is how many hundreds of interviews we're going to do, this is how we're going to test the messaging. And so these are, you know, big government projects but run by outside agencies.
And you would work for like that agency on like a series of projects.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's whatever they, you would be working on possibly multiple projects at the same time. Government initiative to get people cooking more healthy food.
Yeah.
You travel around the country interviewing people around what are the barriers to them cooking healthy food, what kinds of messages are effective to them, what kinds of recipes are appealing, and then the government puts out a series of advertisements, local recipe books in supermarkets, etc., etc., that
mm-hmm.
have all been tested to know that they're going to be effective in supporting people
yeah.
to do what the government is trying to get them to do.
Right. That's very well. That sounds very applied. You said you came here because you wanted to do something more applied. That seems like a very real world.
It's applied in the sense that if you're trying to help make a better world, that's one way you can do it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My particular interest is in working with children and young people around broad education and well-being. So I did some work that was connected with that
yeah.
and stuff around gun crime. And also we did a lot of projects around like youth ideas about masculinity and femininity.
Mm.
You know, so digging into some of those attitudes and experiences and looking at how can we support young people to have more healthy attitudes around
mm-hmm.
sex and sexuality. You know, it's pretty relevant.
Those are two very interesting kind of like different sides of working on an issue. That's cool.
Yeah.
And did you ever end up, like you said, you came here because you like the outdoorsy
yeah.
aspect of it. What did you ever end up doing? Like a
cycling
lot of outdoorsy
and
stuff?
Hiking and, yeah.
That's awesome.
You can see the mountains right there.
Yeah.
I live in Charlottesville, which is like just on the other side of the mountains.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of comforting, just like, no, home, just right on the other
yeah.
side of that. Like, it's
yeah.
right there.
Yeah.
It's cool, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
all
very interesting.
I'm getting into you deciding to come over here. Was there, obviously your mother, you said, was an American and had immigrated. Was there a history of other people in your family or people that you knew coming to the U.S., or was that something you even thought would happen?
To answer your last question first, no, I hadn't perceived of moving here.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, I had come here for summers with my grandparents as a kid for a couple of weeks. My grandfather lived in New Hampshire.
Mm.
I would come here and the little bits of that would be very outdoorsy, but then you also get exposed to Yeah.
He's trying to mow the grass. That
yeah.
makes sense.
Look, can you bring it through here? Look. Come here. Come here. Let's push it through here.
I'm just gonna bring it back up to you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just adds a little authenticity to it.
So no, actually, yeah, I hadn't imagined moving here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. So I remember as a teenager coming here, and, you know, there are lots of stereotypes about Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And you come here, and Americans on the surface, in comparison to reserved English people, are much more friendly.
Mm.
Hi, how are you? Have a nice day. All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're also much more overweight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And drive great big huge cars.
Yeah.
And don't walk anywhere. And these are stereotypes, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you come for a brief period of time from a very different culture and you see those things, you go, oh, it must be true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is strange. And this... You know, I'm 43 now. This was 25 plus years ago I'm talking about. So also in terms of world politics and America's
mm-hmm.
position in that at the time, I remember thinking, you know, this is a weird place, man. I don't know that I want to keep coming back here.
It is a weird place.
It is a weird place.
I don't know anywhere that's not a weird place, right?
That's true.
You know, I'm a teenager. I'm kind of getting... socially minded, and
mm-hmm.
and I remember thinking this is a very strange place, and you know, there are people starving in other parts of the world, or people seriously underserved
mm-hmm.
in other parts of the world, and yet here you are, you have this hugest obesity problem here, and
mm-hmm.
you know, just all those sort of connections that you make without much grounding of cause
right.
and effect, etc. And then I met more of my family and my cousins and realized, you know what, actually good people who do good work just get born wherever they get born. Maybe America's not so bad, it's just everywhere's a bit weird in its own way.
Yeah.
You know. So I remember thinking as a teenager, this is a strange place, and I'm not sure about this. And then realising actually there's all kinds of good things
yeah.
happen up here. And so my evolution into being interested in moving here was kind of rational and kind of gut.
Okay.
And so that was the last question that you thought. Have
yeah.
other people of my family or friends?
Yeah, there's more family
involved.
Or people from growing up. were there people migrating and moving that maybe influenced you? But
as in moving to this country?
Yeah, this country specifically, or just in general, was getting up and going someplace new, something that was a real possibility.
Yeah, great question. So, definitely a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lived in the Caribbean, I lived in other parts of England as a teenager, and for while I was studying. And so, and as did friends of mine, and I have family connections with the Caribbean and with the States, and
mm-hmm.
have always been interested in traveling, and grew up in a household in which both my parents had traveled a lot, and my mum worked on international affairs, and so we had people from around the world coming through the house all the time, and music from around the world, and food from around the world. And it's funny, I was just I was somewhere the other day, and I was with family, and I was sitting like this, I was playing with him, and I was just doing something, and whoever I was with said, you know, that's, you know, not most Westerners can sit in that position. And I saw my mum sit like this
mm-hmm.
as a normal position as a kid.
Yeah.
And people from other parts of the world sit like this. And so...
I just saw him do that just a
yeah,
second.
Right.
Said, oh, yeah.
So the notion that the world is a place out there that's interesting and that you can be in other than just where you are right now has definitely
yeah.
always been a notion. And I've worked with many teenagers who are, you know, 15, 16, 17, and not only have they not been out of their city, they've not been out of their area, you know?
Yeah.
And there are all kinds of reasons for that, but I definitely grew up in an environment in which the world was there to be explored, and that was encouraged. And when I was 18 and I told my mum I was going to Trinidad, she said, well, that's a great idea. Is there a phone number I can get you on? Yeah. Right? So...
That
that's huge. That's really interesting, like the idea of being in a household that's like a global household, like experiencing those things and knowing that's out there for you.
It's definitely been formative for me.
Absolutely.
And I've, not to talk about myself, but I've definitely just even going from Charlottesville to here, like thinking of my hometown not as just a place to be from, but just a place like everywhere else is a place.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's possible to go other places and other places are different, but it's all just a city.
Right.
It's cool.
Right. And you don't know what's normal to you until you step out of
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't know, I think in many ways you learn so much of what's possible in the world and what's different in the world, and you also learn so much about yourself and
mm-hmm.
your own upbringing and some perspective on both your immediate family culture but also your environment and your social culture that I think is priceless. I mean, one of the things that I've often wanted to do in working in with urban youth is to take them to a very different country. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you think you're hard done by because you have to go to school. Let's take you to a place where kids are breaking into the school because they're so desperate to get an education.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a sort of fleeting, generalized statement. But, you know, that sort
right.
of thing of growing up in, for me, growing up in an environment where there was all kinds of contrasts
mm-hmm.
and all kinds of awareness about the world.
Mm-hmm.
Was very influential and very formative.
That would be cool. And there are so many different kinds of being aware too, like in terms of
right.
what you think about your education, what you think about your food compared to
right.
what someone else thinks is probably totally different.
Right. How you think the world works. You know, if you only ever meet people from your 50 meters, your 5 miles squared,
mm-hmm.
then that's very different from meeting people from 5-10,000 miles away.
But also, I bet London was a place where there were people from 5-10,000 miles
yeah.
away.
Yeah, and it's one of the things that I find challenging actually about being in Harrisonburg is that as much as Harrisonburg is a diverse community,
mm-hmm.
it's not a mixing community
mm-hmm.
in my experience.
Yeah,
I walk down to the International Festival and that looks like normal life to me, but you never see that any of the rest of the time. Have you been to the International Festival?
No, not been able to.
It's in September.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know about it?
Yes,
right.
That was like an extra credit event, I think, for
yeah.
this
right.
class. Maybe.
It's well worth it because that, if you're thinking about immigration, that's a context that's been generated in order to
yeah.
give some support to acknowledging the value of different cultures from different places.
Mm-hmm.
But it means that you walk down. You walk around and there are multiple languages happening, multiple ways of dressing, multiple ways of using your body, communicating, physical ideas about physical touch and space, etc., etc., etc.
Yes.
And London is like that.
It's cool. I went to, my dad teaches at the University of Virginia, and he was teaching a class in London. He took my mom and I there last spring,
mm-hmm.
and I was just shocked by like diversity.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it feels so much different than like New York, which
mm-hmm.
feels diverse in its own way, but just like the feel of the city is like so many things are happening and there's so many different perspectives. I totally see that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a wealth.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I think that is a huge benefit to us all. I think that without any question at all, I am deeply enriched by having grown up with a family and friends that is from all around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what we do about to.
Do you think that's going to be, I bet that's going to be interesting with your little one, exposing him to all these different perspectives in Harrisonburg.
Yeah. I mean, he's getting there. He's already got 2 passports. He's been to a couple different countries. We've been to England. Haven't we? We've been to England, we've been to a few different states in America. You've been to the desert, you've been to the West Coast.
Cali.
Yeah.
Which has been your favourite that you've been with him?
What do you think? Well, I mean, going to London is great because that's the opportunity for him to meet everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Like the family and everything.
Yeah. So you asked, do I know many people who have moved to other countries? I guess, a few.
Mm-hmm.
It's not been a massive exodus.
Right.
Do I know a lot of people who have done a lot of travelling, or do I know a lot of people in England who are from other countries?
Yeah.
Yes.
So there was, people were moving, not necessarily in huge waves, but it was certainly something out there that, yeah, this
yeah.
is something that could happen. I could go move
yeah.
someplace else.
Yeah, to and from.
Mm-hmm.
So in London, also, you know, a lot of people from Europe, a lot of people from Central and South America, and other parts of the world.
If I ask a related question, were you from there? So you were saying that you were thinking JMU or Harrisonburg might be your stepping stone, and then
mm-hmm.
where were you thinking you were going to go to a different university? Where did you think that you might go?
Don't know.
Do you think that will happen in the future? Do you think when he gets older you will go somewhere else?
I think that's a good likelihood, a good possibility.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My husband, I actually met here, and he's from Pittsburgh.
Okay.
And he also, I would say we both have some pulls towards a bit more of an urban experience.
Okay.
In part because of some of those points that we're talking about. In an urban environment, depending upon the urban environment, obviously.
Yeah. Right.
It's the urban environment that we would choose, it would be much more usual to be in a much more mixed
mm-hmm.
environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say mixed, I mean culturally, ethnically,
yes.
linguistically.
Yeah.
Socially.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's something that we would both want for ourselves and our kids.
Did you see what your husband did?
He runs a children's camp.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, if you're looking for urban places to live, Charlottesville's right there.
Yeah.
Charlottesville's the best it gets.
You see, so two comments about that. One,
mm.
it's interesting that you would call Charlottesville an urban place. To me, as someone who's from a place with 12 million people,
yeah.
I'm not saying that that's the size that I would want. But Charlottesville weirdly feels more like a city than Harrisonburg, I feel. But the population is the same size.
Mm-hmm.
And they both have a university. They're both
just have different cultural trajectories for how they've gotten to where they are right now, and you can feel it
mm-hmm.
very much so. And it's also interesting that you think that where you're from is the best place.
I am very biased, yes.
Because this is also part of the benefit of going around the world and seeing that people feel attached to where they're from. And there's benefit to seeing the benefit of different places.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
That's funny that I say Charlottesville's like a city. It's like not even that much bigger than Harrisonburg on the grand scheme of things. That's true.
I do like Charlottesville, though.
It is a nice place.
Bless you.
Huh. Kind of wanted to dig in a little bit of being a dual citizen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the first question I have is, when did you first realize that was something unique that you had coming up, where it's like, oh, not everybody is a dual citizen? When was that? How did you reconcile that, I guess? And like,
when you say that it's something unique.
That wasn't something that everybody was, a dual citizen. That that is not a very normal thing, truthfully. It's very rare to find people that are dual citizens.
Nope. Yeah, no, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
I think that the magnitude of that position didn't really hit me until I was here and started to see how much people go through when they don't have that. So I left London because I wanted to,
right.
not because I needed to,
mm-hmm.
not because I was running away from anything, not because I was in any of the number of challenging or adverse situations that many people who immigrate are, whether that's just a purely economic one or otherwise.
Right.
And so, realizing what a big deal it is to no one's going to hassle me about being here in the slightest.
Yeah.
I mean, I am already at a benefit because I'm middle class, white, and educated. So
yeah.
Even if I didn't have a passport, it would be a lot easier for me. It is a lot easier for me,
yeah.
Regardless of whether people know my citizenship. And I would say I have some sense of how difficult it is to not have that, but nothing like the lived experience that such a huge amount of the population here have.
Mm-hmm.
That's been like the coolest part of this class is
right.
Recognizing how little we can take for granted just being in this country and just having these opportunities. Like, people try to get here so, like, people give up their lives every single day to have
yeah.
just being able to be here.
Yeah, and not just because they feel like it.
Yeah.
But it's a lack of options.
There's nothing
and
else.
Severe threats. And I was saying goodnight to this little one the other night, and I said to him, you are safe and you are loved. And I could have started crying because you see all these people. The immediate example at the moment is the caravan that's coming. When people have got kids this age and they're not safe,
yeah.
they can't stay where they are.
Yeah.
And be safe.
Mm-hmm.
As they're moving, they're not safe. And what they're coming to is not safe. I can't imagine what that's like as a parent to not have control over that.
Mm-hmm.
And to be treated like a criminal.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's a whole other debate, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But you're asking me about when did I realise what a big deal it is to have citizenship.
Mm-hmm.
Not really until I was here.
Right. Before that, it was just like a neat factoid. Oh, I'm also
an
American.
Yeah, it's easy to come in and
mm-hmm.
out of the country because I've also got an American passport.
Right.
And, you know, so I can go for a holiday anytime I like or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just made it easier. Easier.
Just unrelated, just things that I'm thinking about. How often do you go home nowadays?
At least once a year so far since I've been here.
And is that, do you still really enjoy that? Is that just, yeah?
Yeah, I love it. And I miss my people. When I say my people, I don't mean like English people. I mean like my girlfriends,
right.
like my parents. yeah. And it is, that. Actually that's funny. Whenever I meet someone here, they go, oh, do you know James? He's English as well. You must know him,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Like, yeah, of course.
There's only
yeah, I
yeah.
miss my family and friends, and I'm forever grateful to technology. You know, when I was 18, 19, 20 and living in the Caribbean, we didn't have WhatsApp or iPhones or video phone or anything like that. This is, I'm sure, something that has more commonality with other immigrants, is that because we have technology, we can be part of people's lives still,
yes.
connected in a way that you couldn't 20 years ago when I first started living somewhere else.
Yeah.
Do you notice like changes when you go back? Like, do you feel like being in America makes you like look at your family and your friends in England differently? Like, do you notice things about their way of life that are very different from here?
That's a great question. I would say, yeah, I think it does influence you being in a different cultural environment
yeah.
to how you experience people that are in your primary, original cultural environment. I mean, cheer up for a start.
You mean that?
Yeah, when I go to England and I
that's
go,
good.
Oh, you know, the weather's really shit.
That's good. I'm glad that America's more cheerful. That makes me feel good about Harrisonburg.
Well, it's interesting, right? Is that a personal disposition and therefore what I choose to see? Or is that a cultural disposition
right.
in the environment that I'm in? Long before I lived in America, I would say hello to my neighbours.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, they, you know, walking up and down the street in England. And for for some that would be a surprise, and for others, often people who are from other parts of the world, that's like, oh yeah, it's another human being.
Hello.
You say hello,
right.
You know. And but then you could also say that that's something that's appealing about being here, because people are more likely to say hello to someone that they don't know without thinking that they're either mad or hitting on you.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So I do think it lends some perspective culturally and interpersonally, not being in London all of the time, like the pace of life, the, and this is more about just sort of city living, the pressure of how hard you have to work in order to survive in a city.
Did you feel that? Was there a lot of competitiveness, like,
yeah,
within the industry?
And that's not that that's not here in this smaller, less usually urban environment, but yeah, I do think it lends some.
I'm sure also at university that's a different, there's not as much of that because people are in their jobs and they're not fighting and paying all the money they have for rent, and they've already, like, if you're working at the university, probably you've already got a PhD, you're probably a little more established than you could be in London. Maybe that's not, or would you disagree?
I don't know. Necessarily. I think it depends on the institution as well. I mean, it's a very different experience to teach at UVA than to teach at JMU, right? They're very different institutions.
Yeah.
So the experience of being there, the cost of living, of being in the two places, the types of students, the expectations, you know. So I'm not sure.
Okay, that's interesting. That's interesting.
Some of the lighter things about moving, what are some of the ways that you've tried to retain your Britishness, or have you found there are things that you do now that are even more overt, where, like, you feel need to demonstrate I'm British? Like, when we first came in, you immediately basically offered us tea, quintessential British. Like, are there other things you find yourself doing to really play that up?
Right. So I deliberately hammed that up because you're coming to interview me about being British. But it's quite normal that I would offer someone a cup of tea,
right,
or coffee on entry. Things that I do,
or maybe conversely, American things that you've picked up,
right,
that maybe you didn't do before, where you kind of adopted that. So, oh, I like this American style of doing it.
I know that my friends tease me on occasion for sounding a bit American or wearing a baseball cap or ow! Don't bite. I would say probably there's some influence, and this could be partly from just being out of London, could be partly being in America. Probably how I dress is probably a bit influenced just by what I see around me.
Right, makes sense.
My English accent is something that is pointed out here, and it is never obviously pointed out in England, and so I am made aware of my Englishness. You know, I can phone LDNB insurance and speak to Rebecca and know that she'll know who I am because she'll remember my voice,
right,
for example,
right,
or meet people a couple of times and they go, oh yeah, I remember you, and I say, oh yeah, it's the accent that gives me away, you know. One of the things I noticed, and this is slightly, thank you, can you bang it on the pillow instead so that it's a bit quieter, and that's going to defeat the purpose, isn't it? Yeah, give that a try. yeah, boom, do it again. When I was teaching in the middle schools and the high schools in Harrisonburg, in Rocking County and in Page County, which is north of here, one of the things that I noticed was that students would often say to me that they really love my accent. And implicitly what they were saying was, your accent's better than mine. because people think that you're smart if you've got an English accent,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, absolutely. Immediate assumption.
Right,
yeah.
Which is correct in this case.
Especially to your high school students,
But seriously, and I was teaching personal responsibility education, sex ed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, hi boys, we're going to talk about sex today. And they're like,
let's do it.
You got your attention. I made a point, but to me, it's not just that I'm particular. It was particularly important to me with those kids. If those kids are saying your accent's better than mine, what they're saying is that mine's not good.
Mm-hmm.
And often, if that's either country accents or Hispanic accents,
mm-hmm.
there's a whole hierarchy there around assumptions about intelligence, assumptions about worthiness. And none of these kids ever said that explicitly, but that's part of what was going on. And
right.
So I always made a point of saying, thank you, I like your accent too. And they'd say, I've got an accent. I'd say, yeah, of course you've got an accent. It's just you don't notice it because everyone around you has the same accent.
Right.
No one in England ever comments about my accent, ever.
As is the nature of accents.
Yes.
Right. And so I'm made aware of my accent in different kinds of ways,
mm-hmm.
with, I think, different implicit meanings from different people in different environments.
Right.
When I'm in New York, no one ever comments about my accent.
Makes sense.
Right.
Yeah, and there's so many.
And there's also a wariness around highlighting difference because we're all here, we're all making a go of it, let's not.
Right.
You know, there are different implicit things happening in New York than there are here.
Mm-hmm.
So, do I do things that are more English or that hold on to my Englishness?
Or like specific holidays that you make sure you celebrate?
I mean, there's maybe some traditions. So, for example, my dad is coming from London for Christmas. So there are particular foods that we all make. And I will love that because that's a food that is reminds me of
mm-hmm.
of
mm-hmm.
being in London. Incidentally, funny, this is total aside, but my mother-in-law, late one evening when we'd all been socialising for a while, we were talking about Thanksgiving, and she asked, how did we celebrate Thanksgiving in England?
Mm-hmm.
I said that... I don't know, I made some joke about, I don't know, the pilgrims weren't really...
We're really out there.
Yeah. So there are definitely American traditions that I'm now part of,
mm-hmm.
that I have to kind of go, oh yeah, okay, so what is this about? Yeah, let me refresh myself for, I mean, not Thanksgiving so much, I know what Thanksgiving is, but
right.
That's not something that was a tradition that my mum celebrated, for example.
Mm.
So I didn't grow up, even though she's American, and she would have grown up
mm-hmm.
celebrating Thanksgiving. That's not something that she transposed to our life in England.
Right.
One thing that I am aware of is, so when I am in London, I speak differently depending upon who I'm talking to.
Mm-hmm.
So if I am, just you adjust to different friendship groups
mm-hmm.
or different... types of peers, or you know, and so I do notice that when I am talking to different people in London, I will use vocabulary and speak in ways that I don't speak to people here. And my husband and I have an ongoing joke that we don't know what each other's talking about half the time, because you're like, what does that word mean? And did I use that right? And you know,
can he tell when you're like change, like slipping in and out of different vocabularies?
Oh, yeah.
You can notice that. That's sweet.
Yeah.
I mean, I noticed myself doing that too, like adapting a little bit more southern accent or.
Absolutely.
Right, we do. We adjust,
together.
And that's part of communication.
Absolutely.
Is that the point of communication is that you're understood, and so you know different ways of using language in different environments, just like you wouldn't talk to your friend the same way you would talk to your boss.
Yeah.
Your intonation would be different, your language would be slightly different, etc., etc. So if I noticed that
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. My dad is from Canada,
right.
And he would be around his family. He would use very Canadian A's, the pronunciation, but then at home when he's not around him.
Right.
It all fades out.
And it's not a conscious thing. It's just,
yeah, it just
it's
of,
it's a shift that you make because
yeah.
you're communicating with somebody different.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
To the surface.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. It's interesting.
I just, what you said a little while ago about when people say, oh, I love your accent, and they're actually saying, your accent's better than mine. I've never heard anyone say that. That's very, very
Yeah, that's a very poignant
yeah.
way of thinking about
and
it.
And also, we can make a cut there.
Thank you.
How, like, in New
Let's
York,
leave that cup alone.
They don't notice that as much. Maybe that's, like, indicative of people in New York being more blind to color and being more blind to where people are from.
I don't know that it's a blindness.
Or maybe it's just
a different kind of attitude and a... Yeah, I don't know. You'd have to ask a New Yorker more about that. I've just noticed that when I'm in a big urban context like that, no one ever mentions it.
Yeah.
And it's frequent here.
Yeah. Here, I guess it's still a novelty.
Right.
For people to get it. And there,
right.
whatever, you're the third one I've
yeah.
heard today. It doesn't
right.
matter.
Yeah.
Is it every... like? How, like, if you talk to 10 new people, like, how many people will say something about your accent?
A good percentage.
A good percentage.
Yeah.
That must
yeah.
get so, so tiring. That's interesting. Right, this is great. I feel like
yeah.
I'm just totally learning about your story,
yeah,
your perspective. Let's do a couple more just to wrap up. We've got a good amount of stuff here. Is there anything, this is not a good question because this is all relying on you coming up with something interesting, but is there anything that people would not expect about the immigration process? Is there anything that people like overestimate the importance of, or something that about the immigration experience from England that no one ever thinks about? Is there anything that just comes to mind as a detail?
Something that comes to mind is living, straddling two places in terms of possessions.
Mm.
So when I came here, I came with a suitcase.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, that has evolved.
It's gotten a little bigger.
A little
right.
bit more than a suitcase.
So that turntable, those records, that amp, all from England, etc., etc., etc. So for a number of years when I was first here, I didn't have the things of my life that were meaningful to me.
Mm.
Or even some of my clothes or my filing system, etc., etc. And eventually I went back, and so I had stuff at my mum's, and I packed up and shipped a bunch of boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something psychologically divided when, you know, you're making a job application and, oh man, they want my certificate for my undergrad. Oh, well, that's in London.
Yeah.
Oh, which file box is it in? I have to ask my mum to try and find it. Or, you know, I was fortunate in that I had somewhere that I could store my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't best pleased about it all the time, but I did have somewhere that I could have my stuff. I divested myself of a lot of things, a lot of furniture. So I was fortunate in that I could stagger things that way.
Right.
And there's definitely something more complete now that I have all my stuff here. So that's something that comes to mind.
I bet that just makes it feel so much more like home, seeing all your stuff from your old home.
Well, but it's also a strange experience because I don't know that I won't live in England again.
Right.
I didn't come here thinking that I wouldn't. I'm very open to that. My husband's open to that. My husband, as it happens, is also a dual citizen, American Irish.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
So he's never lived there, but he has an Irish passport. And so it's this kind of strange, am I here enough to make it worth shipping this stuff?
Yeah.
Even if I'm here enough, not necessarily forever, the notion of being away from my friends forever, I don't want to think about
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And yet, it doesn't make any sense to leave stuff there. That's an interesting kind of straddling, which I'm sure many people experience in different ways, not just in terms of possessions, but relationships and meaningful things.
Yeah.
If you're a person, as I am, whose things are meaningful to me because of the story that's attached to them. So, it's really important that I have those records, because each of those records I know where it came from.
Yeah.
Or I know who gave it to me and what year, because I've written it inside it. Mm. Or, that vase up there is really valuable because that's given to me by blah blah blah. That picture up there was painted by my grandfather. That association with your history, I suppose, is what's interesting about that question. It's not just things, it's not just do I have my winter jacket, it's not just I really like that picture. It's having a history through things, that's meaningful and is around, that gives you a continuity even though the environment is completely different. I think about people, so my mum's husband, second, third husband was Sri Lankan, and his house was completely washed away in the tsunami. So all of his photos, his possessions, everything that had that, his books, everything that had him in them for his history, he was gone. Or people who are losing their houses in the fires in California now. Or people who are in that caravan and had to flee, and they've got everything in one backpack. No photos, no gifts from somebody that was important because of the thing, you know. And so I think that actually that's incredibly meaningful to me, and I'm sure difficult for many to be not just separated geographically from what's familiar, but from that life,
from your whole identity. That's totally a thing that I would not have expected. That was an awesome input. Awesome. Well, are there any big things you should hit?
At university 23 years ago, that little stool thing there.
Oh my goodness.
In Brighton on the south coast of England, at some yard sale.
Yeah.
So that's meaningful. That's a specific set of examples for you there of things that make me go, oh yeah, I remember that Saturday. It was raining, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's very powerful. I mean, I haven't even been alive for as many years as that.
Right.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah.
No, I mean...
You can sit on it if you like. It's very sturdy.
I could not.
Testament to the fact that things can last that long.
That's great. Okay. Well, this has
been fantastic.
I don't have any kind of great conclusion.
Thank you.
You're